Welcome to another episode of The Meta. I'm your host, Jay Larson, and joining me this week are not one, but two very special guests, Zosia Simpson and James Morehouse. Hello, everyone.
Hey.
Hi. Good to be a very special guest again.
You'll always be a very special guest in my book, James.
Thank you, Jay. I would expect nothing less because that is the standard line.
It's true. So this is episode 199 and 200 of The Meta, and instead of doing the normal fare, I thought that I would have two of my dear friends on, and we would take questions and chat with each other and just kind of try to have a good time with each other. So I guess to start off, James, what's been new with you, or introduce yourself, I guess, first, and then say what's been going on in your life.
Sure. My name is James Morehouse. I've been playing War Machine in Australia and around the world for about 11 years now, I think, with a little gap in the middle. I've been over to America and the WCC a few times, but more recently with the whole pandemic thing, I've just been focusing on really having a good time, playing the game, getting the community growing again. And, we've been pretty lucky in Australia. We really haven't had a pandemic in Australia. Some cities have, but largely haven't. And where I have, we basically haven't had one. We had 100 cases during March last year, and that was it. I was on the Meta probably about 15, 16 episodes ago or so, talking about Circle. And since then, it's just been a couple of months of slowly getting small steamrollers back up and running in the Australian Steam scene going. So, yeah.
So it is kind of interesting to me, James. I follow you on Twitter, and you'll periodically do your posts of your local steamrollers and stuff like that that's going on. And it seems like invariably anytime you do a post, unless you like preemptively say something about like, hey, yeah, we don't have a pandemic here because we're not hopeless, you get people like, what's going on here? There's no masks, or, you know, et cetera. And I have to admit, when you say, like, yeah, we had 100 cases, like, a year ago, and then it's been fine, there's just, like, this part of me that feels a deep jealousy.
Yeah, I learned that one the hard way. I posted something on Twitter or Facebook or something, and people were like, where are your masks? And we're like, we literally haven't had a case for 9 months. So I kind of had to preempt a couple of those. And it is quite nice seeing a lot of people come out of the woodwork and saying, oh my God, I missed this. I can't wait to get back to this. It has been a bit of a sort of all the major cons in Australia have still been cancelled since there have been some little sporadic outbursts in Sydney and Melbourne. So even one in Canberra scheduled for middle of this year has been cancelled. So in terms of big events as well, we're still not looking until the end of the year, start of next year, just to be like super safe. So it has been the light at the end of the tunnel for sure.
I am kind of curious. So like in America right now, obviously our compared to like around the holiday season, our the amount of the virus or caseloads or whatever is down significantly, but there's still like guidance from the CDC or stuff like that, like, you know, you should be staying home or you shouldn't be traveling across state borders or et cetera. But there's really nothing stopping you from doing whatever you want. And like, if you want to go travel across country, then you can. Is that kind of how is it in,
how is it placed here
in Australia? Like if you wanted to go, you know, fly to Tasmania and go see Aaron Well, is that any type of issue or no?
Yeah. I mean, right now, no, I can go and do that. But during the outburst, so we had a state lockdown. There are 8 states and territories across Australia. So when back from March to, you know, June-ish last year, they were all closed and you basically couldn't cross the border. So you'd have a couple of hours to sort of make a decision about if you're going or not. And obviously that created some complications for people who are, you know, traveling for work or whatever. However, recently, sort of September-ish last year, they were basically reopened. However, each state has their own arrangements with other states based on how hotspots look. So to give you an idea of scale, in, I think it was December, maybe January, Perth, so Western Australia, got its first case. It was one person, apparently an Uber driver as well, somehow. They shut down the entire state for 5 days, hard lockdown. You can only go out to grab groceries and do like half an hour of exercise on your own. No interstate border crossing, etc. And for the 5 days following that, they had zero cases, and then they reopened. So one case, a week lockdown, back to normal. There was a period, probably our worst period, during I think Melbourne shut down for about 10 weeks or so. And yeah, no one was allowed in or out. And if you did, you had to isolate for 2 weeks, and you had to pay for a special isolation hotel, which was about $3,000 for 2 weeks. And like no recycled air, no nothing. So it was pretty harsh. But these days, outside of the one Melbourne cluster and the one Sydney cluster, it's all basically back to normal. So I think every border is fully open again. But during when the transmission was happening, you could not cross the border unless you were like, I am just driving straight to a hotel and going to sit there for 2 weeks and do nothing.
Ta-da.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy to, I guess, hear how some of the different countries have handled it, etc. Like, it seems like in America that it's just kind of like, we're just going to kind of go about life. And
you guys seem to have just sort of just like, we'll just do whatever, right?
Yeah.
There's some advantages in that we are a giant island. And
right,
there was an analysis of like some of the countries' responses. New Zealand had the number one response. I think Australia was like eighth or something. And there are some massive natural advantages to that. But you guys seem to like, without criticizing you, just sort of like giving up, just like whatever, like vaccines are the end.
Yeah.
Is that fair?
Yeah. I mean, it is, you mentioned kind of the physical isolation stuff. Hawaii is somewhere that I've liked traveling to, and I've kind of kept up with it. And obviously their response and situation has been a lot different than the mainland. and they've been doing a lot better. But it would, like, I think a lot of Americans would just be kind of really freaked out if, like, the interstate between, like, Idaho and Utah got shut down. And it just, I don't know, it just seems like such a, like, freedom of being able to go wherever you want, whenever you want, seems like such a...
It goes against your fundamental something or other amendment rights. Second Amendment, Third Amendment rights, right?
Probably first is going to be association.
Maximum freedom. No, like, I mean, on an individual level, you guys seem to be taking it seriously. Like, I know the two of you are extremely health conscious, and that probably actually goes for the majority of Americans, in that you are very conscious, aware, and appreciating of your neighbors. But on a state and territory and then national level as well, like, it seems super hard to police when you've got so many states and so many people traveling for so many things. That's what I mean by the give up part.
Okay, well, Zosia, how about you introduce yourself and say what's been going on with you?
So my name is Zosia Simpson. I live in Massachusetts in the U.S., just north of Boston. Honestly, not much has been going on because, as we've been talking about, there's a pandemic, and my partner and I have actually taken it pretty seriously. So we try to, you know, have as much fun as we can reasonably, but mostly our nights have just been board games or video games at home. We get takeout every now and then. Actually, I think in the past like couple months, we've maybe gone out to eat once. We'll go if we can find a place that takes reservations and there's like no one else there. But even then, like, it just still doesn't feel right. But other than that, you know, we're just kind of just making it by and, you know, hoping for the light at the end of the tunnel, I guess.
Good on you. I promise it exists. And I am slightly conscious that your inner introvert maybe likes it a little bit more.
Okay, listen. Don't come at me like that. I was so I was talking to this guy at work earlier this week, and he was talking about how he, you know, he's like really excited about meetings and meeting people and doing stuff. And he's just like, you know, he's like, as soon as this pandemic is over, he's like, I can't wait to, you know, have a big meeting and see everyone and shake everyone's hands. And I was, and this was thankfully via email because I was making some awful faces reading this. And then I wrote, so we were like, we had talked on the phone previously. We were like going back and forth via email for about an hour at this point. And then I write back to this email and I said, honestly, I'm a bit of an introvert, so I've been thriving during this pandemic. And I wrote thriving in caps, which might have overdone it. And then I said, Zoom meetings and people staying 6 feet away from me is my ideal scenario. And he never wrote back to me. Like, he just fucking immediately was just like, delete, and just never talked to me again. And I understand that this is a work situation, but it kind of reminded me of like trying to date on Tinder. I was like, oh, that was the thing. That's the thing that I do, where people just stop talking to me.
Amazing.
I was like, oh no. And it's been like a week now. I still haven't heard from him.
I think it's someone who's ambiverted or fluctuates between extroverted and introverted. It's nice to have the option to like go and see mates, yeah, and then sit up on the couch for like hours, right? But 100%. When you're probably more introverted, then it might be nice to say, "Suck shit, you're all introverts now."
Honestly, the pandemic didn't really hit me until about like fall of last year. Like honestly, like the first like 6 months of it, I was like, we're working from home, no one expects me to go out, there are no invitations coming in that I need to like, you know, tactfully decline and like figure out like why I can't go this week. Like, you know, it'd always be like, hey, you know, we're doing this thing over at so-and-so's house. I'd be like, oh, my cat has the flu. Like, I don't fucking know. Like, running out of excuses, guys. Like, but like with the pandemic, like that doesn't happen anymore. They'd be like, oh, can't wait till I can see you again. I'm like, yeah, me too. And I don't have to worry about it. And I can just be like, now, like I can just stay home on a Friday night and no one's judging me for it. Like I get to be who I am as a person, like deep down in my heart. And I am a fucking like hometown hero. I get takeout. I stay home and watch Superman and I don't fucking bother anybody. Like I am the CDC's star child. It's great.
Exactly. And like you can just real quick, you compare it to like 1918 roll call. Who wants to go to war? Do your civil duty. And now it's like, who wants to sit at home, watch Netflix, and play video games and board games? Do your civil duty. Woo!
Yeah, like, that's it. I'm so into it.
Love it.
But, to be fair, there were, like, two or three things I liked doing, and I can't do them anymore, so.
Yeah.
It does suck at some point, and, you know, like, honestly, conventions, they can take a lot out of you. You know, I'm sure that you guys know, like, as players, but, like, no matter, you know, what your role is at a convention, it's like, a weekend long, like, just go, go, go. So it has been a little bit of a nice reprieve, but I do miss it.
That's a really good point.
Yeah, one of the things, I guess, two things that have been kind of difficult for Brian and I. The first one is that, like, one of Brian's, like, natural states of being is just kind of an inclination to hate people or to, like, that sounds bad, but there's just, like...
People are disappointing. I get it.
There's a lot of people that drive Brian crazy. That's and fair. So, like, it's been super difficult because, you know, like, because there's a lot more reason to hate the people around you.
Oh, 100%.
During this pandemic, because you'll be like out and about and you'll see, you know, people not wearing masks or people, you know, it's like there's just a never ending list now, it feels like, of additional reasons to like be pissed off at people. So that's kind of sucked. Another thing that's kind of sucked is that I guess two more. One is like Brian and I, one of the things we did to help our mental health, to help depression, etc., was activities like traveling to a convention or going to Disneyland or etc. And Disneyland's been closed for over a year now.
Yeah.
And you know, it sucks kind of like the routines or the things that You've been one of the things that's been a struggle for Brian is that he's felt like, you know, a lot of the things that I love to do that help make worth feel like it's worth living, I can't do because it feels like other people aren't taking this seriously enough.
There's really no like group mentality, right?
Yeah. And the other thing that can be difficult as well is that Brian's had a fair number of friends where they just haven't really taken it very seriously. And he's kind of been like, I thought that we had like a better set of shared values than it appears that we do. And it's kind of made him reexamine some friendships. So
I feel like some people need to have a really tangible example put in front of them. So for example, I used to be a musician. Some of my mates are still musicians. Some of them were musicians on Broadway. They literally have not worked for like a year, right?
Mm.
So like, because we don't have this group mentality, they don't have a job doing something they trained their whole life for and loved. And instead right. they're doing whatever. Getting yeah. by.
Well, I guess that's our pandemic intro.
of the Meta One, episode 199, Venting and Crying.
So I guess to go over the format of what we're going to do, we do have some Patreon patron questions that we'll go through. And we, as normal, we're going to have the around 45-50 minute main episode for free to everyone, and then the bonus episode that will be for Patreon subscribers. And in the second episode, once we get through the questions that have been submitted to us, we're likely going to talk a little bit more about the pandemic, except talk about it a little bit more through the lens of now things are we're seeing the light at the end of the tunnel. How do we help grow our community? What do we do with that, et cetera? So let's dive in with questions from the patrons. So first question, this is from Hybrid Monkey D, whose username I will always love. He says, coffee or tea, and how do you take it?
Zosha, you can go first.
Either. I will drink either, and tea is just with honey, and coffee is usually just a little bit of sugar and a splash of almond milk.
Coffee every day of the week, preferably 5+ shots a day, generally what we call a flat white, which is like beans that have been crushed and then had hot water drained through them, and then whole milk. That's it.
And do you do tea as well, or...?
If all other options are exhausted and we want to make a steak shot. Yes.
Very well. So for my answer, I hate coffee and never drink it. Well, in my defense, I didn't try coffee until I was in my 20s because I was raised being taught that coffee was like the pathway to hell.
Ah, that it is. That is true.
That explains a lot of my life.
Yeah. So by the time I finally had it, I was like, well, why do I want to eat or drink this burnt water that tastes awful? So no. For tea, I don't usually drink it, but I will throw out here for when people are ready to start going back to Disney World, I will do a Disney tie-in. Make a reservation to go to the Grand Floridian Hotel, and they do an afternoon tea. And it's like really, really good. Yes, exactly. Do it. It's amazing.
How very proper of you. I'd just like to share something really quickly. I'm currently looking at my war machine models as well while we're having this conversation, and I'm making room for I had a spot for what I thought would be a single Infernal Colossal, and I'm just making room for a second one now.
Yes. I'm going to be so excited. I'm going to have to do like a follow-up next time I have Hungerford on like if it really is two Infernals Colossals or Like, I think in the interview he just said there's more than one.
He actually said there's more than one, right? So in my head, what made sense was like a hurricane and storm wall type thing where it's one kit with different parts and not like a Blightbringer and an Archangel or a Waldwrath and a Stormraptor. But you know what? There could actually be both. There could be one that's like a multi-kit and one that's like something completely different. So one that's like a crab with different arms and then one that's like whatever.
Amazing. Yeah. I mean, it's obviously it's going to be a resin kit. The Hurricane Stormwall one is a plastic kit that you can do multiple ways, but I could really easily see them having a resin kit that could be built out three different ways or whatever, right?
100%.
So we'll have to
get, oh, genius.
I feel like I failed as an interviewer that I didn't do a better follow-up question on that, but sign up for next month and we'll get more info from Hungerford.
Nah, you'd be great.
Okay, so next question. Shocked. Yeah, I actually kind of was too. Next question from Hybrid Monkey D. He says, we, in the U.S. at least, have been in partial lockdown for about a year now, and a good number of players have moved to playing online during the pandemic. Do you feel this has changed the state of the game? Do you feel any of these changes will carry over into in-person matches once it becomes safe enough to do so? So, James, I think you've had the most experience doing online play. What has that experience been like, and what's your response to this question?
It's a really good question, really really important as well about the future of the game, right? Because it could go a couple of ways. Online has been interesting in that I think it attracts, for lack of a better term, more of the competitive players, in that it is actually much easier to play online. You sit down at your computer, you don't have to travel to the shop with all your stuff, you log on, and then everything is in front of you, and you can actually really take advantage of things like pre-measuring and proxying out bases, because to just drag a model and undo it on the screen takes 2 seconds. To do it in real life takes 2 minutes, and it's fiddly and awkward, and you're going to be winding down your clock. So I think one of the things to bear in mind in this question is that the game and the game rules are actually about the tabletop game. And then we have like a translated version on the PC, which doesn't sort of follow the rules. It follows the same set of rules, but it doesn't implement the rules in exactly the same way. And so I actually find it much easier to play on computer, but it might not have been, it probably wasn't how it was intended to be designed. I really enjoy playing in person for the people, the community, the banter, the experience, all of those things. And I've been in a very fortunate situation where I've had both. And I've noticed about my playing recently that when I'm in person, I'm literally just happy to be there. I'm like, literally just like, this is my friend and we're playing a game. And like, I'm throwing my caster up more dramatically because I want them to get stuck in. I want to be able to tell a story. I want to have like memories of that time that I did the crazy thing. But when I'm playing online, a lot of that experience is removed. And so I'll be like, really want to test this list. I think it'll be good into the meta. I think XYZ is really strong about it, and I need to see how that stands. Whaley asked me a question the other day. He said, do you think, have you seen much high-powered magical shooting in the meta? And I'm like, what the fuck's the meta, dude? I don't know. No one knows. There's like an online meta leading the way in terms of like least recent releases actually seeing the table. But other than that, like the data that we've got from games is so much less voluminous that it's really hard to like draw any hard and fast conclusions until big events come up. So I've noticed that both online and in person, what I want to get out of the game is just like testing stuff and playing stuff and having a good time. The first big convention back will just be the absolute Wild West. I have no idea what it will look like. Right? Does that answer the question? I don't know.
So I guess I'll do some follow-up questions for you, James. Or I guess some thoughts I've had about it, maybe. Yeah. So I guess the first one is a concern. My Apple Watch is going crazy. So the first concern is, I guess some of it is a little bit selfish motivated as well, but I'll frame it as, like, I love Privateer Press as a company. I have a lot of friends who work there. I want them to continue to be successful, continue sell, and I want to sell their product, and I want to make money selling their product. But obviously, Like if you're playing online, there's no need to buy a Strange Bedfellows list, and you just play it on your computer. And if we want to see Privateer Press be able to, you know, make new models, make new rules, etc., we need to be buying stuff. I guess do you think that my concerns with that are overblown, or do you think that it is potentially an issue?
So that's a great point. I think the number one thing is that this is a tabletop game, and I can't ever see it becoming like primarily a video game, right? So the video game version, War Table, Vassal, whatever, but let's say it's 99% War Table, is there to support the tabletop game. It's there to enable the tabletop game. So I think how War Table functions is a brilliant way to sort of like close the gap in times where we can't. So that will allow people to play in events like the VTC or just with their mates locally. Great. I think that it also functions as a sandbox because the game is so large right now. How do I know I want to go and invest $500 in Strange Bedfellows or whatever?
Right.
And then put it on the table for one game and be like, actually, this isn't my playstyle or whatever. That is a horrible experience.
Right.
Unless you're invested fully in Mercs anyway, right? The number of people who are fully invested in Mercs worldwide would be a very small amount these days as the game has just got bigger and bigger and bigger, right? At least it would be smaller than when the game initially came out, or a new game where you could just have every Merc model within, you know, a couple hundred bucks. So I think as long as War Table continues to like stay in that space where it just supports and enables and allows people to trial and test stuff so that they go, oh, Strange Bedfellows wasn't for me, but I really want to keep on building out this Legion stuff, or actually this Legion, this Blight Archons that I've never had a chance to play before, I actually put on the table, I really like it, I'm going to go and buy it and support the company now. I think that's where it needs to really sit.
Yeah, and I think another way that it could end up working that could be something that's positive for the community is, like, if I'm, let's say I'm a competitive player who's wanting to travel to conventions, I'm going to, you know, be buying models for lists, having them painted or painting them myself, et cetera, et cetera. But the game is just so large now that you can't in your local meta get reps against all the different things that are, that you're going to face at a convention. And you could, you know, locally, maybe we don't have a good Circle player, and Circle is really popular right now in the meta. There is a lot of value for, you know, a competitive player to be able to go on War Table and get Circle games versus people who aren't local. And that person is still going to be, you know, buying models and playing games in person. But it's something that I guess helps round out their skill set.
Yeah, absolutely. I had one other point I wanted to throw in there along those lines, but it's gone. I'll come back to it.
So, another question.
I remember.
Okay, go.
What I've noticed as well is that if you think about the populations of people who play War Machine as like a Venn diagram, right? So you've got people who play War Machine is like a big circle, right? Mm-hmm. And then a smaller circle within that is people who play War Machine and also play online. That generally, those people who play online are not going to be people who only play online. They will also play face-to-face, right? So the entry point or the entry channel for people into this game is generally tabletop, except for at the moment when there's a pandemic. So there's probably part of that smaller circle at the moment that overlaps outside the big circle of people who only play War Machine on the table. And so I think it can be like a really good entry point for a lot of new people picking up Brawl Machine or getting back into the game recently or whatever. What I've noticed is that with this sort of like pause and then refresh of people coming back, there's actually been quite a lot of new people in our meta who, not new, like brand new, but people who played like 5-10 years ago and now are slowly coming back as well because they can see that we have a community and online options. However, their preference is always to play on the table, not online. I've been running a monthly event, and I'm actually not running it next month because we have our own. We're trying to run an Oceanic Teams event online, And I said, go and instead, A, it's Easter, so I won't be running an event, but B, sign up for this one the following weekend. And people aren't as interested because I think people really value the coming back, playing on the table, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So to me, it sort of still sits in that like supporting and enabling role of I'm going to help people get games in where they can. But
I guess let me ask you one more thing and you can give me your opinion on it. I guess this kind of supports or goes along the theme of what you've been saying, but it seems to me like if I was someone who didn't really have exposure to War Machine, or sometimes even if I did have exposure to War Machine, like if it came time where I was going to play a video game, it doesn't seem very likely that I would be like drawn to, I'm going to play this like online adaptation of a tabletop miniatures game when you could be playing like Final Fantasy or, you know, X other, you know, video game, right?
Yeah. I mean, funnily enough, I'm actually like, just thinking about my own experience, I'm actually the opposite. Yesterday was Saturday here and I got some time to myself. I'm like, I'm going to play one of these video games I got recently, Monster Hunter World, right. Warhammer Vermintide, and Warhammer Total War. I loaded them all up, and within like 15 minutes, I was like, I don't have time for this shit. I just want to play like War Machine online or like chess on my phone, and like literally uninstalled the game, so I'm not tempted to play it again. But I'm probably a unique case there. There's probably some like AAA titles that you can just pick up and play. So yeah, it I guess it depends how you spend your time, and then like let's just confuse that with how we spend time in a pandemic on top of all that. Hey,
yeah, I guess one of my points was that it seems like it would be kind of a, so it makes sense to you that you might be interested in that because you have the exposure through the tabletop game, etc. But like the on ramp of how someone would find out about War Machine War Table if they had never played the tabletop game would be, I think, kind of a difficult. It'd be interesting to see if there's anyone who is kind of in that situation, because it seems like it wouldn't really happen.
Yeah. So question for you two then. If there was no pandemic and you're playing at your LGS and some new player walks in and sees some cool models and like, oh my God, what's this? And then you just kind of like sell War Machine to them, like a press ganger would have. And then you say, oh, by the way, you can play online. And if there's a pandemic in the future, this is a really good option and all these things. Do you think that it's like a good selling point, or do you think it's just like a whatever?
I think it's a good selling point either way, pandemic or not, because everybody has different schedules. And sometimes you can't always take, you know, a mid-week break to go out to your local game store and play games for 4 hours, or you can't make it to, you know, to your like local game store for a steamroller on the weekend. So for those people, you know, just like I think one of you was saying earlier, like it fills the gap. It fills many different gaps. And I think it helps fill that gap for people who just don't have all the time. You know, they might be able to steal away like a few hours, but that doesn't include, you know, driving to a store, setting up, and all of that. So they could steal away like maybe like 2 to 3 hours and just be able to sit online and play that one game.
Yeah, I mean, it's also like one of the big advantages of like Hearthstone or, you know, Magic Arena versus going in and playing Magic in person is there's something about being able to, you know, at 2 a.m. laying in bed in your underwear.
Yeah, you can just sneak it in. Yeah, you can sneak it in whenever. You don't have to worry about really like dealing with other people. It's, you know, it's nice. It's convenient.
I am introvert in you talking.
I do have a follow up question for you, Zosia. So, what in your opinion, why do you think people are drawn to games like War Machine or board games or some of these analog social games as opposed to something like some of the you know, video games or et cetera options that are pretty available currently?
I mean, I think James kind of hit the nail on the head earlier when he was talking about, you know, just honestly, it's the community. It's, you know, it's kind of how you're introduced to a game and the feeling that you get being in a local game store and being able to kind of either talk about the lore or talk about CID or talk about the new stupid list that you put together, you know, and just really being able to bond with people and, you know, just kind of share that. And sure, you can kind of do that with video games, but not really. I mean, as someone who unfortunately plays Overwatch too many nights a week, people are actually just kind of shitty and toxic. And, you know, you don't get that in, you know, the brief 15-minute chat that you're online. And as for board games, they generally don't build up in the same way. You know, they don't have like an overarching story that you can follow along with, and there usually aren't changes to the rules, and you don't generally get like these giant conventions that center around them. So I think that the biggest difference between, you know, just a quick pickup video game and a game like War Machine or any other tabletop or analog game is just the people that you get to spend it with, you know, and it's that feeling.
100%. 100% agree.
Okay, so next question from Hybrid Monkey D. He says, from each of you, what is the best looking model released over the last year?
Like best looking as in like the sculpt, or like best looking in art? I probably have sex with them.
Either way, sure.
Did they release Geralt as a model?
Oh god, from The Witcher? Fish, man.
Because that would be my answer.
My wallpaper on my iPad is just his ass. let me think. So one of you go first. I got to think of like all the models.
Best released, best looking aesthetic model that PP have released in the last year. Is that right?
Yeah, I'll go first, and I'm because I've lost all sense of time. I'm gonna extend it past a year.
Oh yeah, God, I have no idea.
But okay. I'm going to go with...
Some of your options just include things like Wintertime Wasteland as well. There's a bunch of new models from that. Uh-huh. Some of the end of the previous Riot Quest session, and then all the main War Machine Hordes models as well.
I'm going to go in general with the Infernals, and then hone in and say that I just really love the sculpt of Amadomus.
Oh, Jay, you're speaking my language. Dude, I'm literally looking at my cabinet right now. I'm looking at the three masters right next to each other, painted, and Amadeus like looming behind them, Zadaroth in front, and Agathon like pointing with their little squiddy things and a little roll. And Amadeus just looks like an absolute boss. So I was looking at that and getting excited about that as well. I'm going to throw a couple of quick ones out there. Bumbles, because I think he's just adorable, though I don't love his pose, but I think overall the whole idea behind Bumbles is brilliant. Isaiah, the new Grimkin Dreadrot mounted Dragoon solo. I think he looks awesome because he's like a pumpkin head dude riding a horse, which is kind of actually a Frightmare. I really love the different ways you can lean into the Grimkin aesthetics, and you can go different ways with it as well. You can go like really gory and sinister, or really sort of cartoonish, or heaps of other options. So this one's a bit comical, but have you guys been following the mini crate line?
A little bit.
So Tom Oliver, he painted up my Flugwug hero we deserve as like Batman, so Batflug or Flugman or something, and he looks adorable. Love him.
Nice. Zosha, I'm excited to hear you select the virtues.
I have absolutely no concept of time, and I don't know what's been released in the last year. I know James just like rattled off a bunch of stuff, but
Say Death Archon? Yeah, that's a great choice. That's my notable runner-up as well.
No, honestly, overall, like I don't know if this was actually within the past year, but I really liked the Medusonia, the Abbey. I think it was, right? The mini crate. Yeah. I like that one because I know Jake got that one and he had it painted. I know it's like been forever since he came out, but I really liked Zuriel. I know no one else did. I know no one else liked him. I loved him. It was one of the first things that I ever bought for Jake. And I put a little cat on the base so that it looked like he was like stopping because he was going to trip over a cat. But that one like just has like a special place in my heart. But I like a lot of the Legion models. They look really nice.
Yeah, speaking of one that feels like it's been released recently because it got a rules update and is probably the best looking model in the game, but has only been seeing the table recently, the Archangel.
Archangels are gorgeous.
Yeah.
Especially like the really nicely painted ones. Like they can, they can look so nice.
Okay, so our next question is from Ben Epp. He says, what's the most fun you've had in any board or tabletop game this year?
Oh, great question. Can I go first just because I can think of something?
Yes.
So we've been playing a shitload of board games recently during the pandemic and really got into some. And some of the best moments have actually been during the much lighthearted games like Cult Express, which is a bunch of cowboys running around on a train. Even in Exploding Kittens, that kind of thing, as opposed to big meaty ones like Scythe and Root. However, I got a little bit into D&D about 6 months ago and then kind of fell out of love. But I have an awesome story for it. So we were playing with my friend who is a very seasoned GM. Two of his mates were very seasoned players, myself and then my other friend, Charles Black, who joined. And it was his first ever D&D camp. And so he's super into games. And he's represented Australia multiple times in Warhammer Fantasy. He's been playing everything for 20 plus years. Loves it. So he creates his first ever D&D character. And it's a cleric. It's like a tanky cleric. And he joins the party one session late. So we are doing the Dungeon of the Mad Mage. And we're basically dungeon crawling. And we come across him. Now, he's developed this very in-depth story for his character where he, as a child, had an encounter with a witch who poisoned him, and it caused him to chop off his own arm. So he was on vengeance for, like, getting his arm back. So he's a one-armed cleric. So for his first ever campaign, he's made it hard mode already. We encounter him. He's like, hi, guys. My name's whatever, the tanky cleric. I'm here to, can't wait to kill goblins with you. I'm like, hey, mate. The first room we walk into, there's a table, and there's a sword in the table. So we're like, what should we? I grab the sword. I'm good armed. So he goes over, grabs the sword. He's stuck to the sword. So the GM's like, you grab it. Your hand is like frozen on the sword. You can't do anything about it. It looks like it's actually sucking the life out of you. And we're like, so what are our options? We cut off your other arm. We try and like cut the sword out of the table and take you back to the town, or we leave you here to die. So we cut the sword out of the table. So our one-armed cleric is now walking around with his hand stuck to a sword that is slowly draining his life as we're all defending him for like the next 15 rooms or something, trying to get him back to town. Welcome to Dungeons & Dragons. You made the worst character ever.
That's amazing. Zosha, you go.
We don't play a ton of different games, and that's mostly my fault, because every time Jake's like, let's play a different game, I say, no, fuck you. And we basically play like three games. And they're not really like anything that's like super interactive. It's like a DC deck builder. And we did play one game a few weeks ago. I forget what it was called, but it was you built out like a map, but it wasn't a map. It was like intestines. And it was, I got to find out what it was called. Actually, Quinn brought it over, and it was some sort of like poop centric game. I did not completely enjoy it. Yeah, I don't know. I'm going to message him and ask them what that game was called. But no, what was the question? It was like, what's like a really good experience? I don't know.
Best board or tabletop game experience in the year.
No, nothing really. I mean, like, we played DC Deck Builder a few times, and like Jake has quit halfway through, and I personally enjoy that, but it's not like, I don't know. We haven't had like any like really like fun like one-armed clerics being dragged through a dungeon.
Amazing.
I'll throw two out there. I have been able to get a few games of Marvel Crisis Protocol in, and that's been a lot of fun. The other one, this would normally be like we'd play it at a tabletop with friends, but instead it's been I've been doing some role playing games with friends via Zoom, and one of the things that's nice about it is it's a lot of my friends that I would see at conventions, and so I don't get to see them at conventions, but I've been able to play you know, some role-playing games with them, and it's people from like LA and Denver and Seattle and Madison, yeah, Wisconsin, etc. And so it's nice to be able to have like a geographically diverse play group that we get to still interact with each other. And I ran the entire Mass of Nyarlathotep campaign for Call of Cthulhu. And there was one of the high points, I guess, high points of the campaign is kind of similar to what James said, where like the investigators went into this throne room for Nyarlathotep, and one of the investigators sat down on the throne of Nyarlathotep, and he failed his sanity check. And usually you take like, you know, a D4 or a D6 points of sanity damage. The roll on the failed roll on that one was a D100, and his character went insane and became an NPC, and he had to create another character after sitting down on the throne of Nyarlathotep. So
amazing. Amazing.
So that's I guess sort of the fun stuff that you can have, like memories playing role-playing games.
It is always hard to share those experiences as well, because it's kind of like there's a little bit of like, oh, you had to be there as well.
Yeah.
I think if you've had one, you can really sympathize with others.
Yeah, there is definitely, you know, as a game store owner, there's some people who come in and they're like, let me tell you about my level 20 wizard. And any game store employee is just like, mother of God, please do not.
Yeah.
So, we're going to pause there, and we're going to continue with the questions in the bonus episode. James and Zosia want to thank you guys for being on this podcast and help celebrate the 200th episode.
Thanks for having
Thank
me.
You. Thanks for having us, mate.
And check out discountgamesinc.com, check out Muse on Minis, and smash the subscribe button on Patreon. There is a new monthly price, and there's also, if you support the higher tier, you'll gain access to a monthly mini episode with Hungerford. The first one of those is now live, and it can tickle your eardrums.
Can highly recommend that. Would always pay extra dollars to have more Hungerford in my ears.
Exactly.
And of all the discounted incorporated game shops that exist, yours is my favorite.
You say the sweetest things, James.